In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
So here's a question to ponder. If Russia exposed the deep state's meddling in the elections, is that election interference? And while that sounds like I'm being a bit, well, impish, it's a serious question. Because, ironically enough, Russia is well positioned with its brigades of hackers and intelligence gathering to expose wrongdoing by our own government against our own people. Against what Biden and his minions claim they want to defend, democracy. Because there is no greater threat to democracy than the deep state blocking you from knowing what the deep state is doing to undermine democracy. Although, just a reminder, when Democrats say something is a threat to democracy, what they really mean is that something is a threat to Democrats. Democracy depends on true free speech and transparency, and not what the Democrats and deep staters mean by free speech, which is you're only allowed to say what we agree with. And as for transparency, you can only see what we want you to see. Right now, there are court cases against the government for these very issues. The government is actually trying to defend its ability to interfere with elections, working with big tech to prevent social media posts and block websites discussing things they don't like, or that would hurt Democrats if people really knew what was going on. They're actually arguing they should be allowed to have these abilities. The government, which is supposed to have the sacred duty to defend free speech, including speech it doesn't like, is attempting to convince the Supreme Court that it is their right and duty to censor. And if the Supreme Court takes away their right to censor, well, that is censorship. Not being allowed to censor is censorship. But back to Russia. In case you forgot already, I'd asked if Russia exposed the deep state's meddling in the elections, is that election interference? You don't have to guess because we know that it's considered election interference, and we know that because it already happened. We have the handwritten notes of John Brennan, the head of the CIA under Obama, during a meeting at the White House in 2016 with Obama and Biden and Comey from the FBI and James Clapper, the director of national intelligence. And at that meeting, Brennan disclosed that the CIA had learned that the Russians had discovered that Hillary planned to smear Trump by claiming he was working with the Russians. They must have been terrified the Russians very well might expose what they had just learned themselves, and that truth about them meddling in the elections would interfere with the elections and not get them the result they wanted. Because just days after that White House meeting, James Comey opened the Crossfire Hurricane investigation into Trump, and doing so gave Hillary the grounding in reality that her disinformation campaign needed to seem real. After all, the FBI wouldn't be investigating Trump if it wasn't true, right? All of it to protect the deep state, to protect democracy, which meant to protect themselves. And when it failed and Trump won anyway, the intel community still tried to paint Trump with Russia and paint Russia as the enemy. But who in all of that was the real enemy? I'd like to welcome back Pedro Israel Horta. He is the son of Cuban immigrants who fled Castro's Cuba. Pedro went on to serve America, spending 18 years in the CIA, but when he encountered problems while in Afghanistan that endangered his fellow CIA officers, he submitted a whistleblower complaint, but that opened the door to him being attacked and punished because the CIA and intelligence community don't exactly like it when their own failures are brought to light. As such, he was effectively forced out of the CIA. He has a brand new book dealing with these issues and what he went through, The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. Pedro, it's great to talk to you again.
Great to be on again. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when we were signing off last week, you ended with a real teaser. You said there's a lot more that makes it even more interesting. And like me, I'm sure a lot of people were wondering, oh, really? So can you elaborate on the even more interesting part?
Well, we left off on the weaponization of the whistleblower process to target Trump. And what I mean by there's a lot more to it is that at the end of the day, when you read my book, even though it's my story, the reality is that it blows the lid wide open on this abuse of government power. And the more of it is specific examples of how the CIA, the intelligence community, will violate the law to protect itself. In my case, EEO and whistleblower reprisals issues. The reality is that for many years, for decades, the national security state has been running amok. You can go back to the 50s, the 60s, with Eisenhower and Kennedy, on how they manipulated presidents and almost force-fed operations to the president on what they wanted done. And if they didn't go well for them, they found a way to cover it up. And that continued in the 70s, kind of got reined in a little bit after the Church Committee. But then Reagan came into the presidency in the 80s, and he empowered the CIA. And with the empowerment of the CIA in the 80s, it kind of drifted back towards its own mentality. Then the Cold War ended. And for the most part, again, there was a lull, there was a calming where it kind of intelligence activities may have, to a degree, died down somewhat. But then came 9/11. And that just transformed the landscape for the national security state, where now you had billions of dollars being poured into intelligence operations of all types, and the proliferation of technology. And this combination of technology and money has created a scenario where we now have a vast, powerful bureaucracy that, like the light switch that you turn the light on and off, can easily turn those powers on against anyone they deem a threat. And they can do it under the predicate of either a counterintelligence threat or a terrorism threat. Your constitutional rights can almost be completely just disregarded and violated if you're considered to be a terrorism threat. And if you're a counterintelligence threat, there are a little bit more restrictions. They still may have to go through FISA court and so forth, but there's ways to get around it with the, like the Flynn unmasking. People may recall how during the interim period when Trump had won, waiting to be the actual president, president-elect, General Flynn was making phone calls, talking to foreign dignitaries, talking to the Russians as well. Well, it turns out that those conversations were being monitored because the intelligence community was monitoring the conversations of the foreigners. But in the process of listening to the conversation of the foreigners, they picked up, obviously, General Flynn talking to him. And they started to unmask his name, reveal his name. And when they wanted to shape the narrative that Russia had a role in Trump's win, they started leaking information that was very damaging to General Flynn and President Trump, so forth. So That's what I mean by the much more. A weaponized national security bureaucracy that has so much power that it can easily, if it wants to, violate laws and get away with it. And we get into the second area of why this happens, and that is the lack of congressional oversight.
Before you get into that, let's go ahead and take a break because we're running up against the clock here. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with CIA whistleblower Pedro Israel Horta. He has written about his experiences, and that book is called The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. You're listening to the iSpy Radio Show. Stay with us. And welcome back. Last week, we had talked in depth about CIA whistleblower Pedro Israel Horta's experiences as a whistleblower and the retribution that he faced for daring to speak up. And this week, we're going to broaden our discussion to look at the CIA in general and some issues with the deep state. His book is The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. And you'll definitely want to grab a copy of that. And so, Pedro, going into that break there, you had been talking about this increase of power that they've got and with the proliferation of technology and how easy it is for our rights to be taken away anymore. And you started to talk about the lack of congressional oversight. So why don't you continue your thoughts there?
Well, the way our government is supposed to work is the three branches of government, the executive, legislative, judiciary. The executive branch grew exponentially during the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration with his New Deal package to try to get the country out of the Great Depression. And then it grew even more with World War II. And that turned into what Eisenhower called the military-industrial complex. There's a lot of history back then that needs to be understood to understand what's going on today and why we have these issues and why they're so significant. There's a good background book I want to mention called The War State by Michael Swanson. And he provides all that context and all those details. And I've gone through this book just to kind of get some historical context. And what has happened is the executive branch has grown so much that it has become another state within the state, literally. People call it the deep state.
Yes.
The national bureaucratic state, the administrative state. It has many different names. It's become more powerful at times than the actual office of the presidency. A president almost works for that executive branch rather than he be the chief executive of that executive branch. Some presidents are more successful than others at reining in the executive branch. Others are not. Case in point, Trump basically was not able to rein in the executive branch of the government. They literally chased him out.
I was going to say, yeah, they turned on him.
So to counter that, the way the Constitution works is we have the legislative branch, Congress, House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, congressional committees, congressional legislation. That's how laws are made. The budget. A president can propose a budget, but in reality, it's Congress, the one, the House of Representatives, that has the constitutional authority to put together a budget. Now, Congress has not and continues to fail at holding the executive branch accountable for their abuses of power. We can go and look at many different instances. Most recently, we can go back as far as the IRS scandal, the Tea Party scandal, per se.
Right.
Where a new party sprung up in 2010 that really shifted the landscape politically, that was threatening Obama's reelection in 2012. So they weaponized the IRS to go after this new party. And they basically shut down this new party, which allowed pretty much Obama to go ahead and be reelected in 2012. Well, Congress did basically call it a show trial, where they just basically called in witnesses, they dressed down a few witnesses, but really nothing was done about it.
Exactly.
Fast forward, we can go on and look at various other cases. Recently, the Weaponization Committee, where we have the House Representative doing a review of how the government has been weaponized. But all they do is call up witnesses, have a hearing, and they've issued a few reports, but now they have not used their powers to either defund select executive branch functions or to hold certain executive branch personnel in contempt.
Right.
Or admonishment or whatever action could be taken.
Yeah. And so once again, it's just, as you say, it's more of a show trial. They get a few sound bites, but then nothing actually ever happens. And certainly we've seen the abuses of an executive power. I mean, look at what Biden's done just even with the student loan situation, where he was told by the Supreme Court he couldn't do it. Now he's doing it anyway, and nobody's holding him accountable. So it's just absolutely crazy. I'd like to back up a little bit. You had mentioned that starting in the 40s and 50s, the intelligence community started to have more and more control over presidents to the point where they were effectively working for them rather than the other way around. When you say that, what kind of controls do they have over the president himself? I mean, are you talking like blackmail or what exactly are you referring to?
Well, I mean, you have an entrenched bureaucracy that has a mandate, has a mission, and they have their marching orders. And they go out and do what they're supposed to do. Does the president know every single thing that one of these bureaucracies is doing? Absolutely not. It's almost impossible. And for that matter, what happens is a president is dependent on his political appointees in these institutions and the civil servants in these institutions to be able to run these institutions effectively. And what happens is they have their own agendas. They have their own ideas of what should be done. We can look at the Ukraine case when President Trump had that phone call with the president of Ukraine, and staffers in the National Security Council did not like what was discussed because they believed that what they wanted to do with Ukraine policy was more important than what the president wanted to do. So they basically mounted an attack against Trump, weaponizing the intelligence community whistleblower process to try to impeach him.
Well, how much of that, because I keep looking at that phone call, and the way that I look at it is they were terrified that he was about to expose everything, because Joe Biden's corruption did not exist in a vacuum. I mean, you can't tell me that he was getting millions of dollars from overseas and foreign entities, and nobody in the intelligence community or anybody else in the banking agencies and whatnot, you can't tell me they didn't know about that. So how much of it was their own agenda, or that they were afraid that they were about to be exposed?
Well, that's another side to that coin. It's got several sides, two sides. One side is the Biden corruption, true. But the other side is when the bureaucracy wants to make policy and imposes its policy preferences on a president, that's the side that I'm trying to elaborate on. And that's where literally they run the president. And one of the best examples I can give you is how, if the president needs a new policy towards, let's say, Ukraine, he can try to come up with something on his own. But the reality is he's going to need the help of his political appointees and his civil servants. And what happens is sometimes the civil servants actually even tell the political appointees what to do. Hmm. Because the political appointees in many instances are also dependent on these civil servants.
Right. They don't have the experience.
They will shape and inform and say, okay, well, the president should consider three options. Two options are out of the question. It's like, we know the president is not going to do those two. So we'll feed him a third. The third one is really the best option, and that's really the one that we want.
And so they steer them into that. So
exactly.
We're up against the clock there. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Pedro Israel Horta. He is a CIA whistleblower, and his book is The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. Lots more to talk about. Stay with us. We are continuing our interview from last week with CIA whistleblower Pedro Israel Horta, who got to see firsthand how the CIA and intelligence community do not like whistleblowers. He has a book about his experiences both blowing the whistle and the punitive actions against him for doing so. It is The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok, and we're going to have links to that on this week's show page, which is 14-10 on iSpyRadio.com. And so going out of that break there, we're talking about how the CIA and some of these civil servants can manipulate presidents into taking actions. But there's the other side of it, too. It's not just policy, to be clear. You've seen it where it's been actual national security issues, too, that they want to spin it towards Congress or to want to manipulate people into taking certain actions, correct?
That is correct. I mean, what happens, these bureaucracies are looking to look out for themselves, for their institution, for their monetary budgets, and they want to make sure that they protect their turf. And they will spin, they will lie, they will... It may not be a 100% bold lie. It could be just simply a half lie or a half truth, or not providing the whole complete details of things. So they shape policy, they shape monetary decisions, they shape presidential actions, congressional actions, in ways that are basically like a media campaign influence operation. And most recently, we saw one which shocked many people, and it's this New York Times article.
Yes.
Where it was talking about how, you know, Ukraine was critical for U.S. foreign policy, CIA operations, and you know, and a bunch of other things. And buried in that article was actually one shocking detail that brought up the issue that everything that was going on as far as U.S. intelligence activities in the Ukraine, going as far back as 2012, 2014, when Trump came into the presidency, apparently they may have not revealed all those things to him. Hmm. They may have kept him in the dark, which goes into this concept of basically a deep state run amok, where the bureaucracy is so strong and so deep in its own policies, its own programs, its own functions, that it's almost more powerful than a president.
So the manipulation, the manipulation that you're talking about is not just they're feeding him certain information, whether it's Congress or the president, because they want him to take a certain action, but withholding it too. This notion that they can withhold information from the president, I mean, you would think that would be illegal, certainly borderline treasonous, if they're essentially backing him into actions and not giving him full information. How is that not illegal?
I mean, there's no law saying that they can't do that. Sadly, that's the truth. I mean, you can go back to the Bay of Pigs, Cuba, John F. Kennedy, and look at that case and see how it's very similar. They basically railroaded Kennedy into a decision that was fundamentally flawed, but they got what they wanted. And when they went back and analyzed what had happened, they had realized that they really messed up, because every indicator as far as what would be the final outcome of doing such an invasion in Cuba, that it would have failed. It was pretty much well known, but it's an example of how these bureaucrats will push their agenda on a president and even Congress in ways that is wrong, because it hurts the country, and it can be illegal at times when you start getting into abuses of, you know, the intelligence collection processes like FISA, like what's done with General Flynn. We've reached a point now that if this is not reined in, we're down a slippery rope of basically becoming into a tyrannical form of government.
I was going to say we're definitely at that crossroads. We're certainly on the threshold, and I think we've already stepped into that room. So just to go back a little bit, you had mentioned that New York Times article, and the title of that is "The Spy War: How the CIA Secretly Helps Ukraine Fight Putin." And it's an article where one of the Times journalists had apparently been given access and information about CIA operations in Ukraine, and even got tours of some CIA facilities. To me, that article seemed rather odd that the CIA would expose its own operations like that. I mean, why do you think someone okayed that disclosure?
There's a lot of more questions than answers from that article. From my optic, having worked at the CIA, I'm not even too sure the CIA had something to do with the actual leak of that information. We can pontificate, speculate, you know, kind of talk about it. I mean, on one end, the Ukrainians are definitely desperate for the money. It seems like mostly the Ukrainians were the ones quoted in that article. So, I mean, we can pin it on them for sure. As far as the CIA, when it comes to covert action, one thing they're very good at is keeping their mouth shut, unless they want to leak something. But if they leak something, they're certainly not going to leak something that's going to undermine their hand at continuing to be able to do such covert action work. And from my perspective as a former CIA officer, that was a pretty damaging leak that actually could hurt them in the long run to continue such programs.
Oh, I would certainly think so, because if nothing else, it proved exactly what Russia has been claiming the whole time. And that would seem an odd choice by the CIA to essentially bolster Putin's argument for being there. That's one of the excuses he used to go into Ukraine, was he was saying that the West was using Ukraine as a front to attack Russia. And lo and behold, there they are, bold as brass. Okay, let's take a break. We'll have lots more with Pedro Israel Orta. His book, again, is The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Pedro Israel-Horta. He's the author of the book, The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. It's about his experiences as a CIA whistleblower. He spent 17 years serving this country in the CIA in a variety of roles, including analyst, covert operations, and war. And I later turned whistleblower when a chief of base's actions put his and other CIA officers' lives in danger. So, Pedro, we were talking a little bit about some of these covert actions there. And are there rogue programs and operations out there that people higher up the chain maybe have no idea about? Or perhaps they're simply shielded from these so that they purposefully don't have to know? Or is every operation sanctioned somewhere by somebody higher up the chain?
It's a complicated question to answer, because the way covert action works is pretty, it's a messy business. And what I mean by that is you have to have a covert action finding, a presidential finding. The president has to sign off on it. Congress is notified in the process. And the way it works is they're done in a way that they're broad. They aren't necessarily very specific, because if they're made very specific, they're very difficult to implement. So what happens is they come up with a plan. Like, let's take, for example, the 1980s, the Mujahideen in Afghanistan. We want to supply the Mujahideen with weapons. We want to train them, and we want to make them an effective force to combat the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan. In generic terms, that's a covert action finding. That opens the door for implementation through many different mechanisms. Now, you have to maintain the integrity of that finding so you don't deviate from what the finding allows you to do. And that finding is regulated nowadays post-Church Committee. That was done to correct abuses of previous covert action initiatives that were really not necessarily rogue, but where they really messed up the covert action back in the 50s and the 60s, where abuse from the perspective of the lack of oversight, where the president wasn't notified, the president may not have wanted to know all the details, Congress may not have wanted to know all the details to have plausible deniability if something went wrong. Well, post-Church Committee, mechanisms for oversight were put in place where Congress must be notified. And you know, it's really the National Security Council, the president, that has the final say on these covert action findings. So they're very well regulated. And the day-to-day running of operations within covert action findings may not necessarily mean that every single minute detail is briefed up the chain up to the president or Congress, but the overall impact of the program, of how it's working, of what good it's doing or what's not working, is definitely briefed high up in the chain of command. And I'll turn that over to you.
Sure. Well, as you're talking here, especially with the Ukraine war here, you know, and we've got this New York Times article exposing their involvement there, which proves Putin's point. And so, was it by design that this was leaked? Was it somebody trying to poke the CIA in the eye there? I mean, there's just so many conflicting different narratives there. So how do you know what to trust when you're inside the CIA? Because, I mean, as we said, in this case, that leak, that story could have been done for a number of different reasons. Maybe they want to escalate the war, or maybe they're trying to get, you know, give a good excuse to get the CIA out and start the process of us backing out of the Ukraine war. So how do you know what's real and what's been manufactured?
Well, I mean, you got two kind of leaks. You have authorized leaks, and you've got the unauthorized leaks. The authorized leaks are the tricky ones. That's where either Congress, the presidency — what I mean by the president is people that work for him — or even, you know, some executive branch members will purposely leak certain details, and they do it to shape and influence public opinion. Those are basically okay according to them, despite the fact that they're still, you know, disclosing classified information that, if it's done unauthorized, could be investigated and prosecuted. If I, as a CIA employee, decide to go talk to the press and leak some operational matters to them, I could be very well investigated and charged under the Espionage Act for leaking national security details. It's one of those things that makes you wonder at times what is going on and who is leaking and why are they leaking, especially when it's damaging information that should not be out there.
Well, exactly. And when you don't know what's real or what's been manufactured, you know, I mean, how do you make decisions in that kind of environment, especially if you're the president, for heaven's sakes, when you don't know what's real, what's been manufactured, or what can be trusted, or even who, for that matter?
Well, I mean, if there is a leak of, like, this New York Times article, if the president didn't know all the details, that leak would have gotten his attention, and it would have raised some alarms, and there would have been heads rolling as far as people having to speak to the president, tell him what's going on. And we've seen that in the past. And sadly, that does happen. As far as what's true, what's not true, you can go back to the 1950s, particularly the late 50s, and actually 1960, the presidential election between Nixon and Kennedy.
Right.
And they were talking about a bomber gap, a missile gap, a space gap, this gap, that gap, that the Soviets are catching up to us, they're overtaking us in missiles, they're overtaking us in bombers. There was no gap at all. I believe, based on some of the historical records, the Soviets had a few bombers, and they had maybe, I think, four missiles, and their missiles were liquid oxygen fired, which meant you had to load the fuel, which would take a long time. So who was leaking that is the question that needs to be asked. And it, when you do the historical research, the bureaucrats were trying to leak things out because they wanted more funding to keep building more weapons.
I think that confirms a lot of our suspicions about what's been going on here. Okay, we do need to take a break. Lots more to talk about with Pedro Israel Horta. His book, once again, is The Broken Whistle, Deep State Run Amok. This is the iSpy Radio Show. And welcome back. We're talking today to Pedro Israel Horta. He is the author of the book, The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok, and it's about his experience being a CIA whistleblower, but also now he's very involved in exposing the deep state, due in large part to his own experiences there. And so we were talking about some of the manipulation that goes on here, and you said some of this goes back to the 1950s. And in my opener last week, I had mentioned that Eisenhower famously warned us about the military-industrialized complex, but why didn't he do anything if he knew something about it?
He was hamstrung from one perspective, and that is just the nature of these bureaucracies, that they continually fought him in every way they possibly could. And the biggest example we have is in 1960, during that presidential election, that the bureaucracy was constantly leaking about the Soviets having more weaponry, more capabilities, and they didn't. But Eisenhower had to keep his mouth shut because we had the U-2 spy plane flying over the Soviet Union collecting intelligence that let us know exactly what they had and what they didn't have. And he had to protect that capability and keep that capability secret. So, I mean, it also becomes very hard for a president to rein in a rogue bureaucracy all alone by himself. It comes down to political appointees. And when John F. Kennedy realized the monster the bureaucracy was after the Bay of Pigs failure, he realized that he was going to have to rely on a few key critical insiders who he appointed. And it takes basically a strong political appointee backing a president to be able to combat the power of a rogue bureaucracy.
Hmm.
And that's something where President Trump failed in his term as president.
He definitely did not have better prepared. Yep, he did not have enough good people around him that were there. They were not themselves beholden to the bureaucracy or the deep state. So as far as Eisenhower being manipulated, and we've mentioned the Bay of Pigs, and that was, again, another attempt by the CIA to manipulate us into a war with Cuba. We certainly saw it over in Vietnam with the manipulations to get us involved. That, how many wars exactly do you think has the CIA been behind? You know, we've also got the more recent experience with Iraq war with the weapons of mass destruction. Are they behind all of these conflicts?
Well, I mean, it's not just the CIA. It's Department of Defense, CIA, the intelligence community. They all have their hands in the this war machine. And in reality, it's a mix of private industry and public interests where they all feed together. Congress has a big part in it as well. They're the ones that basically pass these budgets. They're the ones feeding hundreds of billions of dollars into this war machine, and they've been doing this since post-World War II.
Well, let me ask it this way. Are there any wars or conflicts since the 1950s that the CIA or other elements of the deep state haven't manufactured us into?
Hard to say. I mean, directly, I mean, we know what happened on 9/11. On 9/11, it caused war and had significant ramifications. But as far as the Department of Defense and the CIA in this particular case, they just went along with the outrage of trying to go ahead and destroy Al-Qaeda and all the terrorists.
There's a lot of people who think 9/11 itself was a CIA operation. Do you have anything to lend credence to that?
I mean, it was an intelligence failure. And if there's one thing you can fault the CIA and the intelligence community on, the myriad of intelligence failures. They failed to predict the fall of the Soviet Union. They failed to predict the fall of the Berlin Wall. They failed to predict the fall of many other things, of certain government fallings or government risings. You know, we're feeding billions of dollars into the defense industry, and yet we fail to predict wars, or we get into wars that we can't win.
You had mentioned that the president is really dependent on his political appointees to help him fight these bureaucracies, and that kind of reminds me of the so-called good people myth, that all of these agencies are really filled with these really terrific people, and they're just kind of overshadowed by the few bad people. Can you address that? I mean, how many do you think are genuinely good people who truly love America in these agencies? And how many does it take to neuter all of those good people? Or maybe there aren't that many good people in some of these agencies.
I mean, you do have good government employees.
Sure.
Not every government employee is a bad employee. But now what happens is, as you move up the ranks, the further up the rank you go, you have to fit a certain mold. You have to be like them. You have to be one who is essentially going to put the bureaucracy first. You must be a defender of the bureaucracy. What I mean by that is, these bureaucracies have become so big and so powerful that if anything poses a threat to their power, their funding, or their programs, they deem it as a threat that needs to be let go.
Eliminated.
How often do you hear of a government agency saying, okay, we have completed our mission, we don't need to exist anymore, we're going to shut down and we can move the money to go somewhere else?
Right.
You never see that happen.
No, unfortunately.
So what I mean by that is, you're going to have to be a good bureaucrat. And the way you're a good bureaucrat is, you put the bureaucracy first.
Hmm.
So along the way in your career, you see things that this is not good for the country, this is not good for the bureaucracy. You either shut up and do nothing and turn a blind eye and just go along so that you can continue moving up the ranks. Or you basically speak up. And if you speak up like I did, they will find a way to either make you quit. And if you don't quit, they'll find a way to fire you.
Well, the problem is, of course, is that when people, when these bureaucracies take the actions that they do, there are very real-world consequences to this, and lives are either ruined or even lost. Let's go ahead and take a break there. We'll wrap things up with Pedro Israel Horta after this. His book, one more time, The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. And welcome back in our final segment now with Pedro Israel Horta. He is the author of a brand new book, just came out this last month, The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. It's about his experiences as a CIA whistleblower and how they turned on him for trying to expose what was going on there. And so in the time that we have left, a couple questions. One I just have to ask you, what are your thoughts on the CIA killing Kennedy?
Well, why are they hiding secrets? I mean, what are they hiding? If they're hiding something, it certainly shows that they may have had a role in it somehow. And based on the historical evidence that is now available, it's clear that some of the people involved in Kennedy's killing could very well had links to the CIA. So what needs to happen is all those secrets that they're not letting out must be let out so that people can finally find out exactly what the CIA has been hiding for going on now, what, 60 years?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that has always been my thought, is if you weren't involved, just open the books and let people see. It's that way with any organization when they're distrusted. Just let people see. You don't gain trust by hiding information and keeping people in the dark. So in the time that we have left, I had mentioned last week that you were an ordained minister prior to going into the CIA. Did that ever cause any conflict with the CIA, you not only being a Christian, but a licensed minister and an evangelical minister at that?
Well, my morals and my mindset, my ethics, had a conflict with them. For example, when I was in Afghanistan in 2015, because I refused to turn a blind eye and allow a man to be falsely accused and potentially fired, I did not play along. My morals kept me from doing something I should not have done because I did what was right that angered them. And consequently, that led to the reprisals, and the rest is history, which you can read about it in the book. So it posed a conflict because I was a bad bureaucrat, but I was a good Christian, where I walked my faith. I walked and did what was right. I judged righteously. I took care of my brother. I took care of my sister at the CIA. You know, it wasn't one thing where I was using my brother and my sister to advance my career. No. I was helping others instead of using them as a stepping stone to move up the chain of command.
Well, you being a devout Christian, I mean, isn't that really what the CIA, the FBI, and the deep state, and really the whole of government needs? Don't they just need more devout Christians? I mean, I have urged people on our show before that this is where our prayers need to be targeted, that God will convict people who have done wrong and that they will be driven to repentance and come forward like you did. And I mean, how can we as Christians more effectively pray for those in the CIA and the intelligence community that God will convict them of their wrongdoing, that they will repent and step forward into the light?
I mean, we can go on another hour talking about this particular question. And we don't have an hour. We got a few minutes. The problem is we as Christians have abdicated our role in society, and we have allowed basically the non-Christians to run things. It takes a lot of work studying. I had to work hard at studying to get my bachelor's and my master of arts degree. A lot of these people in positions of power have worked very hard to get the degrees, the training, have worked hard doing really hard jobs to be able to move up the chain of command. And you have to commend them. If the righteous people would be just as diligent as these wicked people are, you know, the righteous people would have a more prominent role in society, but we don't. We tend to be lazy, apathetic, complacent. I mean, to go to school and get a master's degree, you really have to work hard-headed. And what we need is more Christians to be willing to do what it takes to be able to get a position of power so that they can allow their morals and their ethics and their Christianity to be put in the public places so that our faith can shine. We're called to be light. Put your light on a pedestal. Don't hide your light.
Yes, exactly. And I think along those lines where we need more moral people in the CIA and throughout government, does the CIA itself have any regard for human life? I mean, they effectively inspired, if not outright engineered, this war between Ukraine and Russia and many others going back to the 50s. I mean, in this war alone, there are estimates that at least 1 million Ukrainians have been wiped out. Do human lives not matter in pursuit of the CIA's goals?
I actually wrote a quote in my book where the answer to that is no. Human life doesn't matter to them. And the basis of my answer is by their actions. If they're unwilling to take care of their employees, forget it. They're not going to be interested in taking care of anybody.
Yeah.
And the book gets into it because there was another whistleblower who blew the whistle on a serious program deficiency that, according to press reports, may have cost the lives of dozens of assets who may have gotten killed. And the problem could have been resolved had they fixed that technical program, but instead they chose to take reprisals against the whistleblower. That's one example. And then as far as employees actually are nothing more than a number. And if you're a good bureaucrat who plays along with what they want you to do, you'll do good. If you're a bad bureaucrat because you put the bureaucracy above the Constitution, you will not do very well. And, you know, so the answer is no.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. Pedro Israel Horta, he is a CIA whistleblower, and he's author of the book, The Broken Whistle, A Deep State Run Amok. Pedro, this has been really insightful, and I want to thank you so much, and we look forward to talking to you again sometime in the near future.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
While listening to our guest today, on the one hand, I thought how incredibly daring of the deep state to take the risk that it did to undermine and interfere in not just the election, but in the presidency itself. But on the other hand, were they really taking a risk? Because even if they got exposed, which they did, the deep state would protect itself, which it also did, which was to get rid of the threat, Trump, and to replace him with Biden, who was not only no threat, but rather an enabler. When it gets right down to it, the deep state was willing to sacrifice America to protect themselves. What about you? Are you willing to sacrifice America by doing nothing? Aren't a few hours a week worth it to find something that you can do to put America first and restore our guiding principles and rights? To find something you can do to help make sure those who support the deep state are driven from office? In the coming weeks, we'll have more information about things you can be doing to make that happen. So stay tuned, because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.